Someone who has come to know a single particle knows the whole universe. Welcome back. This is Buddhist Books Podcast, episode 308. And since that ends with an 8, we'll be reading Dogen's Shobogenzo, The Treasury of the Eye of the True Dharma, the writings and lectures of Ehe Dogen, who brought Soto Chan from China in the 1200s to Japan and called it Zen. Apparently that's Chan with a medieval Japanese accent. But they both are derived from dhyan or dhyana. Dhyan meaning meditation, or dhyan being the limb of yoga which gets translated into the English word meditation. And you'll find the English word meditation used in several different contexts. The meditations of Stoicism or whatever, you know, that are unrelated to the yogic meditation, which comes after the yamas, the niyamas, the asanas, the pratya, you know, the sense withdrawal, the breath control, and the concentration, dharana, dhyana, dhyan, chan, zen, or maybe zan, I don't know, that's it. You get it, maybe you get it, I don't know. Yeah, so there's no need to, you know, catch up on anything before hearing this lecture. Or is there? In fact, the entire Buddhist Books podcast project was inspired by wanting to catch up on things in order to even begin this book, because Ehe Dogen often would make reference to sutras, reference to precepts of the Tipitaka, for instance. And I wanted to be able to more thoroughly understand what Dogen was making reference to. And so that motivated me to get these books and eventually to begin reading them in order to motivate myself to actually read them. I thought I'd hold myself accountable by letting you watch me read them. So that's what this is all about. So I'm not any kind of expert who's going to teach you about this. No. I'm just a guy. I'm reading it. And you can listen to me read it if you want. Sometimes I have thoughts about what I'm reading and I blurt them out. But take that for what you will. Okay. So yeah, all of that being said, here's the playlist. You're welcome to check it out if you want to, but it's not necessary to know what's going on for today. And so I'll go ahead and jump in. I don't know what we're reading today. Don't know which lecture it is, and I'm about to find out. It is Shōwaku Makusa, translated as Not Doing Wrongs. All right. So the starts out with a paragraph written by the translators, presumably, and then we'll get into the translation. Shō means many, or miscellaneous. As in Shobogenzo? No, probably not. Aku means, treasury, many or miscellaneous. Shō? Maybe. I'll keep reading. Aku means wrong or bad. Maku means not or don't. And sa means to do. So, Shōwaku Makusa means not doing wrong. These words are quoted from a short poem called The Seven Buddhas' Universal Precept. Don't do wrong, do right. Then our minds become pure naturally. This is the teaching of the many Buddhas. That was in quotes. This poem tells us how closely the teaching of Buddhism is related to morals. In this chapter, Dogen teaches us the Buddhist theory of morality. Morality, or ethics, is, by its nature, a very practical problem. But most people are prone to forget the practical character of morality, and usually only discuss it with words or as an abstract theory. However, talking about morality is not the same as being moral. Morality is just doing right or not doing wrong. Here, Master Dogen explains real morality, quoting an interesting story about Master Choka Dorin and a famous Chinese poet called Haku Kyoi. Okay, I got the sense that that was like Gudo Nishijima and Chodo Cross like pontificating their own ideas. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But sometimes I get the sense when I read it that they're explaining to us something about what we're going to read, and other times I get the sense that they're just sort of free associating based, and I do that. I'm as guilty as anybody. You might even hear me do it today. But yeah, I just think that whole thing about ethics and morality, ethics is morality and morality is not this, but it's this. I don't think that that's related to what Dogen's going to be talking about today. But we'll see. Maybe I'm wrong. You ready? Here's the translation. The Eternal Buddha says not to commit wrongs, to practice the many kinds of right, naturally purifies the mind. This is the teaching of the Buddhas. This teaching, as the universal precept of the ancestral patriarchs, the seven Buddhas, has been authentically transmitted from former Buddhas to later Buddhas. Latter? And later Buddhas have received its transmission from former Buddhas. It is not only of the seven Buddhas, it is the teaching of all the Buddhas. We should consider this principle and master it in practice. These words of Dharma and the seven Buddhas always sound like words of Dharma of the seven Buddhas. What has been transmitted has been received one to one, is just clarification of the real situation. What has been transmitted and been received one to one is just clarification of the real situation at this concrete place. This already is the teaching of the Buddhas. It is the teaching, practice, and experience of hundreds, thousands, and tens of thousands of Buddhas. In regard to the wrongs which we are discussing now, among righteous wrongness and indifference, there is wrongness. Its essence is just non-appearance. The essence of rightness, the essence of indifference, and so on, are all non-appearance, are the state without excess, and are real form. At the same time, at each concrete place, these three properties include innumerable kinds of dharmas. In wrongs, there are similarities and differences between wrong in this world and wrong in other worlds. There are similarities and differences between former times and latter times. There are similarities and differences between wrong in the heavens above and wrong in the human world. How much greater is the difference between moral wrong, moral right, and moral indifference in Buddhism and in the secular world? Right and wrong are time, with a capital T. Time is not right or wrong. Right and wrong are the Dharma. Dharma is not right or wrong. When the Dharma is in balance, wrong is in balance. When the Dharma is in balance, right is in balance. Okay? This being so, when we learn the supreme state of Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi, when we hear the teaching, do training, and experience the effect, it is profound, it is distant, and it is fine. We hear of this supreme state of Bodhi sometimes following good counselors, and sometimes following sutras. At the beginning, the sound of it is, do not commit wrongs. If it does not sound like, do not commit wrongs, it is not the Buddha's right dharma. It may be the teaching of demons. Remember, teaching that sounds like, do not commit wrongs, is the Buddha's right dharma. This teaching, do not commit wrongs, was not intentionally initiated, and then intentionally maintained in its present form by the common man. When we hear teaching that has naturally become the preaching of Bodhi, it sounds like this. What sounds like this is speech which is the supreme state of Bodhi in words. It is Bodhi speech already, and so it speaks Bodhi. When it becomes the preaching of the supreme state of Bodhi, and when we are changed by hearing it, we hope not to commit wrongs. We continue enacting not to commit wrongs, and wrongs go on not to be committed. In this situation, the power of practice is instantly realized. This realization is realized on the scale of the whole earth. The whole earth, the whole of time, and the whole of Dharma, W-H-O-L-E, obviously. And the scale of this realization is the scale of not committing. For people of just this reality, at the moment of just this reality, even if they live at a place and come and go at a place where they could commit wrongs, even if they face circumstances in which they could commit wrongs, even if they seem to mix with friends who do commit wrongs, wrongs can never be committed at all. The power of not committing is realized, and so wrongs cannot voice themselves as wrongs, and wrongs lack an established set of tools. There is the Buddhist truth of taking up at one moment and letting go at one moment. At just this moment, the truth is known that wrong does not violate a person, and the truth is clarified that a person does not destroy wrong. When we devote our whole mind to practice, and when we devote the whole body to practice, there is 80 or 90% realization of not committing wrongs. Just before the moment, there is the fact of not having committed just behind the brain. When you practice by garnering your own body and mind, and when you practice by garnering the body and mind of anyone, the power of practicing with the four elements and the five aggregates is realized at once. But the four elements and five aggregates do not taint the self. All things, even the four elements and the five aggregates of today, carry on being practiced. And the power which the four elements and five aggregates have as practice in the present moment makes the four elements and five aggregates, as described above, into practice, when we cause even the mountains, rivers, and the earth, and the sun, moon, and stars to do practice. The mountains, rivers, and the earth, the sun, moon, and stars in their turn, make us practice. This is not a one-time I, E-Y-E with a capital E. It is vigorous eyes at many times. Because those times are moments in which the eye is present as vigorous eyes, they make the Buddhas and the patriarchs practice. They make them listen to the teachings. They make them experience the effect. The Buddhas and the patriarchs have never made the teachings, practice, and experience tainted. And so the teachings, practice, and experience have never been hindered. The Buddhas have never hindered the Buddhas and the patriarchs for this reason. When teachings, practice, and experience compel the Buddhist patriarchs to practice, there are no Buddhas or patriarchs who flee before the moment or after the moment, in the past, present, or future. In walking, standing, sitting, and lying down through the 12 hours, we should carefully consider the fact that when living beings are becoming Buddhas and becoming patriarchs, we are becoming Buddhist patriarchs. Even though this becoming does not hinder the state of a Buddhist patriarch, which has always belonged to us. In becoming a Buddhist patriarch, we do not destroy the living being, do not detract from it, and do not lose it. Nevertheless, we have got rid of it. We cause right and wrong, cause and effect, to practice, but this does not mean disturbing or intentionally producing cause and effect. Cause and effect itself at times makes us practice. The state in which the original features of this cause and effect have already become conspicuous is not committing. It is the state without appearance. It is the state without constancy. It is not being unclear. And it is not falling down, because it is the state in which body and mind have fallen away. When we investigate them like this, wrongs are realized as having become completely the same as not committing. Aided by this realization, we can penetrate the not committing of wrongs, and we can realize it decisively by sitting. Just at this moment, when reality is realized as the not committing of wrongs at the beginning, middle, and end. Wrongs do not arise from causes and conditions. They are nothing other than just not committing. Wrongs do not vanish due to causes and conditions. They are nothing other than just not committing. If wrongs are in balance, all dharmas are in balance. Those who recognize that wrongs arise from causes and conditions, but do not see that these causes and conditions and they themselves are the reality of not committing, are pitiful people. I guess I'm a pitiful person because I'm not really following what it's saying, but I can see that it has very little to do with the translator's introduction. I'll keep reading. I'm following parts of it, but certain point, it's like, what, Master? Could you back up a little? The seeds of Buddhahood arise from conditions, and this being so, conditions arise from the seeds of Buddhahood. It is not that wrongs do not exist. They are nothing other than not committing. It is not that wrongs exist. They are nothing other than not committing. Wrongs are not immaterial. They are not committing. Wrongs are not material. They are not committing. Wrongs are not not committing. They are nothing other than not committing. Sir. Okay. It's a koan. It's meant to make you go, oh. Break the brain so it stops thinking rationally and just becomes spontaneously enlightened. Thank you, sir. I get it now, I think. I'll keep reading. Such things as an outdoor pillar, a stone lantern, a whisk, and a staff, as if those things were around me, are neither existence nor non-existence. They are not committing. The self is neither existence nor non-existence. I've been dipping into the Madhyamaka, the Nagarjuna, eh? Mr. Dogen. The seven Buddhas. Honestly, I couldn't name them. I don't know what seven Buddhas he's referring to. All I know is it's interesting to observe. I'll just keep reading. Sorry. The self is neither existence nor non-existence. It is not committing. Learning and practice like this is the realized universe, and it is a universal realization. We consider it from the standpoint of the subject, and we consider it from the standpoint of the object. When the state has become like this already, even the regret that I have committed what was not to be committed, end quote, is also nothing other than energy arising from the effort not to commit. But to purport, in that case, that if not committing is so, we might deliberately commit wrongs, is like walking north and expecting to arrive at the southern country of Etsu. Well, you will get there eventually if you can walk on water. And for a very long time. Never mind. The realization between wrongs and not committing is not only, quote, a well looking at a donkey, right, end quote. I vaguely remember that. I think that'll come up again later. It is the well looking at the well, the donkey looking at the donkey, a human being looking at a human being, and a mountain looking at a mountain. Because there is, quote, preaching of this principle of mutual accordance, end quote, wrongs are not committing. By the way, when I make fun a little bit, but when I'm not understanding, that's, I acknowledge, a me issue, and I apologize to anybody who's trying to follow the text, but getting interrupted by me going, what? I don't get it. If you're frustrated, I understand your frustration. Anyway, I'll keep reading. By the way, you can download this for free and turn to page 86 and just read it yourself. I mean, you know, it's all down there. You can also purchase a copy if you want, or you can read it for free. It's on the Internet Archive. Okay, so this is like a quote. The Buddha's true Dharma body is just like space. It manifests its form according to things, like the moon reflected in water. Okay, now we're back to Dogen talking. Because not committing is accordance with things, not committing has manifest form. Quote, it is just like space, end quote. It is the clapping of hands to the left and the clapping of hands to the right. Quote, it is like the moon reflected in water, end quote, and the water restricted by the moon. Such instances of not committing are the realization of reality which should never be doubted at all. Quote, practice the many kinds of right, end quote. These many kinds of right are classed within the three properties as rightness. There's a lot of footnotes, and I haven't been... Yeah, okay, the three properties are rightness, wrongness, and indifference. Okay, I'm going to stop glancing down at the footnotes. Interrupts the flow most of the time, unless there's something really weird with a footnote next to it. Okay. The three properties as rightness. Even though the many kinds of right are included in rightness, there has never been any kind of right that is realized beforehand and that then waits for someone to do it. There is none among the many kinds of right that fails to appear at the very moment of doing right. The myriad kinds of right have no set shape, but they converge on the place of doing right faster than iron to a magnet, and with a force stronger than Vairambhaka winds. Okay, there's a footnote there. Very strong winds mentioned in ancient Indian legends. I might have guessed that, but I'll keep going. It is utterly impossible for the earth, mountains and rivers, the world, a national land, or even the force of accumulated karma to hinder this coming together of right. At the same time, the principle that recognitions differ from world to world in regard to right is the same as in regard to wrong. What can be recognized as right is called right. And so it is like the manner in which the Buddhas of the three times, past, present, and future, preach the Dharma. The similarity is that their preaching of Dharma when they are in the world is just temporal, because their lifetime and body size also have continued to rely totally upon the moment they preach the Dharma which is without distinction. So it is like the situation that right as characteristic of devotional practice and right as characteristic of Dharma practice, which are far removed from each other, are not different things. Or, for example, it is like the keeping of the precepts by a Shravaka being the violation of the precepts by a Bodhisattva. The many kinds of rights do not arise from causes and conditions, and they do not vanish due to causes and conditions. The many kinds of right are real dharmas, but real dharmas are not many kinds of right. Causes and conditions, arising and vanishing, and the many kinds of right are similar in that if they are correct at the beginning, they are correct at the end. The many kinds of right are good doing, but they are neither of the doer nor known by the doer, and they are neither of the other nor known by the other. As regards the knowing and the seeing of the self and the other, in knowing there is the self and there is the other, and in seeing there is the self and there is the other, and thus individual vigorous eyes exist in the sun and in the moon. Okay. This state is good doing itself. I think I know what that means. This state is good doing, the doing of good itself, the good doing itself. But I like the idea of reading that as this is good doing itself. Never mind. Oops, made more sense in my head, I think. At just this moment of good doing, the realized universe exists, but it is not the creation of the universe, and it is not the eternal existence of the universe. How much less could we call it original practice? Doing right is good doing, but it is not something that can be fathomed intellectually. Good doing in the presence of a vigorous eye, but it is beyond intellectual consideration. What? That was a sentence? All right. Vigorous eyes are not realized for the purpose of considering the Dharma intellectually. Consideration by vigorous eyes is never the same as consideration by other things. The many kinds of right are beyond existence and non-existence, matter and the immaterial, and so on. They are just nothing other than good doing. Wherever they are realized and whenever they are realized, they are, without exception, good doing. This good doing inevitably includes the realization of the many kinds of right. The realization of good doing is the universe itself, but it is beyond arising and vanishing. It is beyond causes and conditions. Entering, staying, leaving, and other concrete examples of good doing are also like this. At the place where we are already performing, as good doing, a single right among the many kinds of right, the entire Dharma, the whole body, with a capital W and a capital B and a footnote, Chorai Zenshin, aren't you glad I stopped to read the footnote? The real land, and so on, are all enacted as good doing. The cause and effect of this right, similarly, is the universe as the realization of good doing. It is not that causes are before and effects are after. Rather, causes perfectly satisfy themselves, and effects perfectly satisfy themselves. When causes are in balance, the Dharma is in balance, and when effects are in balance, the Dharma is in balance. Awaited by causes, effects are felt, but it is not a matter of before and after. For the truth is present that the moment before and the moment after are balanced as they are. The meaning of naturally purifies the mind is as follows. What is natural is not to commit, and what purifies is not to commit. The concrete state is natural, and the mind is natural. The concrete state is not committing. The mind is not committing. The mind is doing good. What purifies is doing good. The concrete state is not doing, and what is natural is good doing. Therefore it is said that, quote, this is the teaching of the Buddhas, end quote. Those who are called Buddhas are, in some cases, like Shiva. A god of free will, god of movement, represents the god called Shiva in Sanskrit, the god of destruction and regeneration of the Hindu triad of Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu. So Shiva. I was checking the footnote to see if that was the Shiva I was familiar with, and it is. Like Shiva. But there are similarities and differences even among Shivas. And at the same time, not all Shivas are Buddhas. Buddhas are, in some cases, like wheel-rolling kings. But not all sacred wheel-rolling kings are Buddhas. Wheel-rolling, Dharma wheel-rolling, so kings that promote Buddhism, basically. King Ashoka or whatever. We should consider facts like these and learn them in practice. If we do not learn how Buddhas should be, even if we seem to be fruitlessly enduring hardship, we are only ordinary beings accepting suffering. We are not practicing the Buddha's truth. Not committing and not doing are donkey business, not having gone away, and horse business coming in. There's a footnote, and believe you me, I'm going to be checking that footnote. What's up with the horse and the donkey? Master Chokei asks Master Reiyun Shigon, quote, what is the great intention of the Buddha Dharma? End quote. Master Reiyun says, quote, donkey business being unfinished, but horse business coming in, end quote. Oh, I get it now. All right. I like it. Hakukyo-i. Oh, there's a footnote. Why not? Let's read it. Hakukyo-i died 846 at the age of 76. That's our calendar, right? 846, not some other calendar. Haku was his family name. Kyo-i, so from his perspective, this was 400 years prior. Just under 400 years prior. From our perspective, obviously, it's more like 1,200 years prior, right? To now, a little less. 20 years less than 1,200 years ago, right? Kyo-i, literally sitting easy, that's a cool name, was one of his pen names as a poet. He was also called Haku Rakuten. It is said that he attained the truth under Master Buko Nyomen, after which he became the governor of several districts, visiting masters whose temples were in his district and practicing Zazen. All right, sounds like a cool guy. Should we read the footnotes for everyone that's being mentioned? Yes. Why not introduce the characters? Is there any kind of visual, Editor Edward? Is there a Haku Kyo-i illustration you can put up? All right. Continuing. Haku Kyo-i of Tong, China, is a lay disciple of Zen Master Buko Nyomen. I think we just read that in the footnote. Is there an illustration of him? Thank you. The footnote says, successor of Master Baso Doitsu, dates unknown. Wow, he must have not made much of a splash in history to have such a footnote. May we all have, never mind. And a second generation, it's like, should we wish for footnotes like that? That one day they'll be like, I don't know, Edward Reed something. He did, I think he had a YouTube channel or something. Anyway, and a second-generation disciple of Zen master Kosei Daijaku. Is there a picture of him? 62. I mean, that's the number of the footnote. Successor of Master Nangaku Eijo Kosei, or Kyangsi in Chinese pronunciation, was the name of the district where Master Baso lived. Zen master Daijaku was his posthumous title. I'm going to stop reading footnotes now. Okay. So, without the footnotes, Haku Kyo-i of Tang Dynasty is a lay disciple of Zen Master Buko Nyomen and a second-generation disciple of Zen Master Kosei Daijaku. When he was the governor of Hangzhou District, he practiced in the order of Zen Master Choka Dorin. All right, one last footnote. Master Choka Dorin died 824 at age 84. He received the Dharma from Master Kinzan Koko Itsu. I feel like we've read this already. No, it's just similar to the other one. Who belonged to a side lineage going back to the fourth patriarch Dai-i Doshin, but not going through Master Daikon Enno. Choka means bird's nest. It is said that Master Choka practiced Zazen in and lived in a treehouse. Okay. All right. Well, anyway, back to the text. In the story, Kyo-i asks, quote, "What is the great intention of the Buddha Dharma?" End quote. Dorin says, quote, "Not to commit wrongs, to practice the many kinds of right," end quote. Kyo-i says, quote, "If it is so, even a child of three can express it," end quote. Dorin says, quote, "A child of three can speak the truth, but an old man of 80 cannot practice it," end quote. Thus informed, Kyo-i makes at once a prostration of thanks and then leaves. Kyo-i, though descended from Haku Shogun, is truly a wizard of the verse who is rare through the ages. Okay, who's Haku Shogun? Haki, a general of the founder of the Jin Dynasty who reigned from 255 to 250 BC. The general was famed for his excellence in military strategy. In this sentence, military ability and ability as poet are opposed. So from their perspective, that would have been 1,000 years prior. And from ours, it's 2200-ish. So being descended from somebody 1,000 years ago, I mean, I don't know. It's like, ironically, 1,000 years ago, one of his ancestors was completely a different guy. Yeah, you know, that will happen. But all, you know, Dogen. Anyway, I'll keep reading. Okay, people call him one of the 24 great men of letters. He bears the name of Manjushri. You've heard of him? There's probably more than one, like Hermes. There's more than, never mind, keep reading. or bears the name of Maitreya. All right. Just to make things more confusing for people who are learning, like, okay, so that's Manjushri, that's Maitreya, and who's this guy? Well, sometimes he's Manjushri, sometimes he's Maitreya. Maitreya, the guy who's asking questions in the Lotus Sutra, or Maitreya, the Buddha yet to come? I don't know. It's just a common name. Like, which Carlos are we talking about? All of them. No, none of them. Any of them. The great Carlos, or that specific Carlos. Doesn't matter. Be here now. Continue. Nowhere do his poetical sentiments go unheard, and no one could fail to pay homage to his authority in the literary world. I hope I don't fail to pay homage to him in the literary world. I'll just keep reading and see how it pans out. Nevertheless, in Buddhism, he is a beginner and a late learner. Moreover, it seems that he has never seen the point of this, not to commit wrongs, to practice the many kinds of right. I like him already. And quote, even in a dream, Kyo-i thinks that Dorin is only telling him, quote, do not commit wrongs, practice the many kinds of right, with exclamation points, end quote. Though through recognition of the conscious aim, thus he neither knows nor hears the truth that the time-honored teaching of the not committing of wrongs and the good doing of rights has been in Buddhism from the eternal past to the eternal present. He has not set foot in the area of the Buddha Dharma. He does not have the power of the Buddha Dharma. Therefore, he speaks like this. Even though we caution against the intentional commitment of wrongs, and even though we encourage the deliberate practice of rights, this should be in the reality of not committing. In general, the Buddha Dharma is always the same. Yeah, in general. In general. Whether it is being heard for the first time under a good counselor, or whether it is being experienced in the state which is the ultimate effect. This is called correct in the beginning, correct at the end, called the wonderful cause and the wonderful effect, and called the Buddhist cause and the Buddhist effect. Cause and effect in Buddhism is beyond discussion of theories such as different maturation or equal streams. There's a footnote on equal streams. Should we check it? The theory that moral and immoral behavior produce different results is represented by the words different maturation. This expresses the moral viewpoint. The opposing theory is represented by the words equal streams. This expresses the scientific view of cause and effect, that is, the view which is not concerned with the subjective evaluation of cause and effect. Oh. Okay. This being so, without Buddhist causes, we cannot experience the Buddhist effect. Because Dorin speaks this truth, he possesses the Buddha Dharma. Even if wrong upon wrong pervade the whole universe, and even if wrongs were swallowed, what? Even if wrongs have swallowed the whole Dharma again and again, there is still salvation and liberation in not committing. Because the many kinds of right are right at the beginning, in the middle, and at the end, not doing has realized nature, form, body, energy, and so on, as they are. Kyo-i has never trodden in these tracks at all, and so he says, quote, even a child of three could express it, end quote. He speaks like this without actually being able to express an expression of the truth. How pitiful, Kyo-i, you are. Just what are you saying? You have never heard the customs of the Buddha. So do you or do you not know a three-year-old child? Do you or do you not know the facts of a newborn baby? Someone who knows a three-year-old child must also know the Buddhas of the three times. How could someone who has never known the Buddha, the Buddhas of the three times, know a three-year-old child? Do not think that to have met face to face is to have known. Do not think that without meeting face to face one does not know. Someone who has come to know a single particle knows the whole universe. Dogen's like on a rant, and he's kind of like a little bit like, I don't know, he's in one of his moods, but I like that particle whole universe thing. As you know, that was how this episode started. That's that little teaser thing. Anyway, I'll keep reading. Now you know the context in which that line. I'll keep reading. And someone who has penetrated one real Dharma has penetrated the myriad Dharmas. You penetrate one, you penetrate them all, like my dad used to say, but that was unrelated. Sorry, I'll just keep reading. And he didn't say that. That was just someone who has not penetrated the myriad dharmas has not penetrated one real dharma. If you haven't penetrated all of them, you haven't penetrated one of them. Okay, I mean, maybe in this context. Anyway, so when students of penetration penetrate to the end, they see the myriad dharmas and they see the single real dharmas. Therefore, people who are learning of a single particle are inevitably learning of the whole universe. To think that a three-year-old child cannot speak the Buddha Dharma, and to think that what a three-year-old child says must be easy, is very stupid. That is because the clarification of life and the clarification of death are the one great purpose of Buddhists. A master of the past says, quote, just at the time of your birth, you had your share of the lion's roar, end quote. Quote, a share of the lion's roar, end quote, means the virtue of the Tathagata to turn the Dharma wheel, or the turning of the Dharma wheel itself. Another master of the past says, quote, living and dying, coming and going are the real human body, end quote. So to clarify the real body and to have the virtue of the lion's roar may truly be the one great matter which can never be easy. For this reason, the clarification of the motives and actions of a three-year-old child are also the great purpose. Now there are differences between the actions and motives of the Buddhas of the three times and those of children. This is why Kyo-i, in his stupidity, has never been able to hear a three-year-old child speaking the truth, and why, not even suspecting that a child's speaking of the truth might exist, he talks as he does. He does not hear Dorin's voice, which is more vivid than thunder, and so he says, even a child of three can express it. As if to say that Master Dorin himself has not expressed the truth in his words. Thus, Kyo-i does not hear the lion's roar of an infant, and he passes vainly by the Zen master's turning of the Dharma wheel. The Zen master, unable to contain his compassion, went on to say, quote, a child of three can speak the truth, but an old man of 80 cannot practice it, end quote. What he was saying is this. A child of three has words which express the truth, and you should investigate this thoroughly. Old men of 80 say, quote, I cannot practice it, end quote, and you should consider this carefully. I leave you to decide whether an infant speaks the truth, but I do not leave the infant to decide. I leave you to decide whether an old man can practice, but I do not leave the old man to decide. It is the fundamental principle to pursue, to preach, and to honor the Buddha Dharma like this. Shobogenzo Shoaku Makusa preached to the assembly at Kosho Horenji Temple on the evening of the moon in the second year of Eno. The 15th day of the 8th lunar month. Can you translate that into American? And then the year was 1240. Some of these lectures of Dogen are better than others. It is one of my favorite books, if not my favorite book. But sometimes I'm a little bit like, what? Like, I think, you know, and I get it too, as a person who produces content. You know, Dogen, in his time and place, was a content producer. And so, you know, it's like, okay, it's been like a week and a half since I gave a lecture to these monks. And confused about wrongdoing and talking about this and that, and you know what, I'm gonna write this lecture, but he maybe wasn't feeling quite as inspired as he was when he wrote another lecture that you read and go, oh, whoa, this blew my mind, I'm gonna think about this forever, all things in all the 10 directions is one bright pearl, or existence time, or any of my other many favorites. I didn't hate reading this, but I was a little bit like, okay, all right, okay, this is what we get for today. And, you know, maybe I'm missing a lot of it. Maybe I'm not understanding. I mean, I know I'm not understanding. There's whole paragraphs I read and go, what? What are you talking about? So it's obvious I don't understand a lot of it. I hope that you enjoyed it, whoever you are, the watcher of the YouTube video that I am now recording. You are in the future and I am in the past. No, you're in the present and I'm in the present. Both these things are true and false. Bah. Okay, well, you know, there it is. I hope that you enjoyed the music, and I'll go ahead and do the usual closing that we do here on Buddhist Books Podcast. To the north and to the south, to the east and to the west, to the spirits of light among us and to the spirits below, we send out our reverent love and compassion. May all beings be happy. May all beings be serene. May all beings be in peace. Until next time.